record on this computer. Okay, and I'm gonna mute everybody. Current and new participants will be muted. Yes. All right. So, welcome to Zen Talk number 55. Anybody? 55?
Just always ask me about numbers.
50 something. This is, my name's Todd Adams. I'm with Zen Parenting Radio. And before we get into the questions, I want to get into some feedback that our teammate Aaron and Kathy and I talked about or actually received back from you. So first of all, thank you for taking the time to fill out the survey. And I'm going to spend the first few minutes of this podcast just talking about some of the results and maybe some action items that we're going to do as a result. You ready, sweetie?
I'm ready.
Somebody said, I don't know how to get the private.
You don't have to read them all.
I know, sweetie, but okay. I don't have them memorized, so I don't know what
but
else.
But what I mean is, like, what's the gist rather
the
than
the gist
reading?
Is there's a bunch of different gists.
I know, but if I was.
I know, sweetie, but it's like one sentence.
Okay.
I don't know how to get the private Zen Talk podcast on the phone. So
okay.
Here's the deal.
Okay. I understand what you're doing now. I'm sorry.
You keep pointing it at you. What about us, sweetie? This is about us. Is that better?
Yes. We still have Christmas dish towels. I'm behind. I have a Christmas wreath
you know what?
On the door.
If you get to May, we're almost to May. Let's just ride it out.
You know what? I took the lights down. I'm not one of those people, but this dish towel is so soft.
Yes. Let's just use it.
Even though it has a snowman on it.
So if somebody can do me a favor, maybe Millie, find the link on how, or maybe just a screen capture. On the Team Zen member page, there is directions on how to get the Zen Talks in your private podcast app on your phone. I don't know if you could do that, Millie. If not, I'll do it in the show notes later. But anyways, so because there are some teammates out there that don't know that there's a private podcast app on their phone, and I want to make sure that they know, because otherwise it's tedious. Only people
didn't
like
Brad do a tutorial?
Yes, there's like video tutorials. There's all these different resources. Okay. So for anybody out there. One of the people said that the Facebook isn't as engaged as they wish. And I think they were talking about the macro, like I think this person, whoever it is, I don't even know who it was, but she just wished there was more engagement. So I guess, my feedback or my response to that feedback is it's kind of on us, but it's kind of on everybody else to do what they feel engaged to do. So, you know, we do our best, but, we're all for engagement, but we also don't lead the charge.
If you engage, we will re-engage. But you know, I also feel like I want to have the social networking page and I go to it every day. But I know people have lives and they're not on social networking all day. So I don't want to, sometimes people don't look at social networking for 3 or 4 days and that's fine. Like we don't want to be like, we have to be there every day. So use the Facebook page in the way that best serves you. And we will try to bring people there to answer questions.
This teammate said the times actually work well for me. I just wish I knew more in advance where they were so I could plan ahead accordingly. So I got to own that one because I'm kind of in charge of communications. And there is a events page on Zen Parenting Radio. So even if you're not on Team Zen, people can find out when the next Zen Talk is. But I have not advertised that enough. And sometimes I even forget to put it on as an event. So
if you go to zenparentingradio.com and you click events, all the Zen Talks are there.
They should be there, but sometimes I forget. But I'm not going to forget anymore. In here. And then our next Zen Talk, and this goes on to some of the feedback, we're going to continue to do 2 Zen Talks a month, but one of them is going to be at lunchtime, like we always do, and one of them is going to be at 7 p.m. Central Time on some random Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. So our next one, I think, is going to be on May 6th. I think I got to check the calendar.
I'll check it.
Check it, because it's a Monday, because JC has a lacrosse tournament, has a lacrosse game at 5, and we're going to hustle back and do it by 7.
And KJ's coming that day.
Yes, so it's going to be a busy Zen parenting day.
So has anybody read the book, How to Be a Happier Parent, by KJ Del Antonio? Came out last year. She's a writer for the New York Times. She is she's coming to our house in a couple weeks. And we're going to interview. We don't usually interview people unless they're willing to come to our house.
And only if they're awesome.
Well, and if they're awesome.
Awesome and available.
And she is awesome. She's friends with Bridget Schulte, who we like. That is the 6th. You also have a doctor's appointment that day.
Oh, I have a doctor's appointment that day. I have a bald spot on my head, and there's this doctor that shoots these things in the back of my head to help stimulate growth. But the guy said that it might come back a different color and it might come back curly.
It doesn't look like it's coming back a different color.
Oh, really?
No, so it's just coming back regular.
Brown. I might have curly hair in the back of my head next time you guys see
me. So, yes, it is May 6th. It is at 7 p.m.
And then the another thing is that people want us to bring on special speakers.
Yeah.
We hear you, and we will put that – we'll set an intention for that.
I'm thinking Gemma.
Gemma Hartley.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Gemma Hartley is going to be on our show. She wrote Fed Up about emotional labor. And she's going to be on in a couple weeks, and I'll just ask her to come on Team Zen too. And we'll set it up. It won't be right away.
This person says, I love the occasional surprises. The Christmas card in the mail made my day. Free t-shirt, water bottle. Thank you. Thank you. You're welcome. That's something I love doing. You love doing it.
Well, the Christmas card I did, but Todd does all the free gifts.
So if you've been with the team for longer than a year, and you haven't gotten your Team Zen water bottle, let me know and I'll get you one. I just sent a bunch more out, like 20 of them out 2 weeks ago. So
how about like one more? Because I'm sure people have questions.
I know they will, but it's only 12:07. It's fine.
Okay.
A bonus Zen talk here and there. Sometimes we like do those Facebook Live things if there's like a long question.
Yeah.
We've done that. So we'll try to do that. And then two more things. Micro communities. There's one that's going on right now being led by, what's her name? I'm sorry. Dawn? I forgot your Dawn. Regarding differently wired kids. So if you guys are interested in that, just let me know and we'll kind of empower you to facilitate it. But anyways.
So email us. So what Todd's saying is if you want a micro community, like you wish there was a micro community around anxiety, or you wish there's a micro community around how to communicate better with your kids or how to practice self-care. I mean, I'm just these, you know, it could be anything. Just email us and we'll see if we can bring together a community for you, and then you guys can have Zoom talks. Todd and I most likely won't be on them. They'll be for you, but you can kind of, you know,
we want to be a vehicle of connection.
Yep.
We want to be that vehicle. So the first question, and then I'm sure other people will have live questions. Can we either show this or remove it? this is what we got last night at our brag night, which is what
it used to be called brag night at our kids' schools, and now they call it summer learning night. I think parents didn't like the word brag, but my daughter made this deer.
Yeah. So it looks more like a bear. I would have gone with a bear instead.
And she was very proud of it. But every time I pass it, it kind of makes me smile. Cause he's like, there was a bunch of her friends who like, theirs is going to be like in an art show and stuff. And she was showing them to me and they're like fancy and they have feathers on them. And they're like, and I was like, wow, where's yours? She's like, I think mine's in the library.
It's in the back row.
So we went into the library and here was the deer. It's so sweet.
Do a close up of that.
It's sweet. It has an eye.
It's a baby deer.
It doesn't have a mouth.
That looks like a bear.
It's a bearish deer.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just wanted to show you that. I love it.
Helen says that is a very dear deer.
Yes, that is what I have to say to her. She was very proud. She, even though it was in the back of the library, she was like.
And if Helen wanted to call us dears, you know, like as a term of affection, she would say, that is a very dear deer, dear.
Yes,
right?
Top comma deer.
That would have been awesome. Millie liked that one. Okay. And Anita says, just had a thought about a micro community for parents of tweens and teens.
Yes.
Because I'm struggling immensely.
Yes.
I'm all in, Anita. If you want to lead the charge, you and I will talk offline.
And then we'll send an email.
Send an email
to everybody
who wants in. You'll do a Zoom talk just like this, and we'll rock it and roll it. So, Anita, just make sure you reach out to me afterwards. First question. My grandma's very old. She's 98, and she's been sick for a while. This last week, things turned for the worse, and doctors don't give her much time. She's been living with my parents for the last 20 years, and my mom has been caring for her. My mom is very attached to her. My question is how to support my mom in the grieving process that is inevitable in just a matter of days now. I know everybody grieves differently, but my mom has a tendency to blame herself. Hmm. I don't think this is healthy, especially that she went above and beyond in caring for my grandma for many years now. I think my mom will have a very hard time letting go. What's the best way to support her in this difficult time? Thanks for listening. Wow.
You want me to go first or you want
to
go first?
Yeah, why don't you go first? Because I don't really know what I'm going to say.
You know, the first two things that, do we really, does this microphone pick us up? No, it picks us up.
Okay. Don't worry.
Well, the first two things that I would say is that, first of all, I'm sorry about your grandmother. What a life though, man. 98.
Yes.
That's fantastic. Even though it doesn't make it any less difficult, but that just kind of struck me. That's a wonderful long life. There are two things that I thought of. Number one is that your mom tends to blame herself. And what I would use if she starts to blame herself is to ask her questions. If she says things like, I should have, you know, I wish I would have, or I should have, to say, what do you mean, mom? Explain to me what you think you should have done, and allow her to kind of process through what she's saying. Because sometimes we just have, we're kind of a skipping record that something's our fault. And then when someone asks you a question, you talk through it, you realize it doesn't really make sense. I wouldn't do the, no, you're not, mom, don't say that, because that just kind of forces your mom into a corner, maybe makes her feel worse. Just ask her questions. Like I do this with my clients a lot when they'll say, I shouldn't have done this, you know, it was my fault. And then I'll say, well, explain to me what you mean it's your fault. And it forces them to really think through, is that logical? Does that make sense? The second thing I would say, and I told Todd this last week, that it was really helpful to me. I was listening to an old Brene Brown thing. I know she's everywhere right now, but it was something old. And she was talking about how, maybe it was her conversation with Oprah. It doesn't matter. She was talking about how one of the things she's been doing really well lately is allowing her kids to, when they're struggling with something, just joining them in their darkness, not joining them like going into the darkness, but just allowing them to be dark and not expecting them to be different. Meaning if her son comes home and has a bad day and says, you know, the kids are picking on me or I'm struggling with something, that she's like, oh, that sucks. I know how that feels. Now, I know Todd and I preach that all the time. This isn't like new news, but there was something in the way that she explained it where I recognize that sometimes with my children, I do that, but then I also use humor to kind of get them out of it. So like I'll join them in their darkness and again, I want to be clear. It doesn't mean you go dark with them. It just means you allow the darkness to be there. And then I'll be like, yeah, but it's good news that we're having spaghetti, right? Like,
So just to have you do a deep dive, why do you do that?
Because it makes me more comfortable.
Exactly.
And also because I use humor with my kids. And so I know it's effective. Mm-hmm. So I think what I took from it though, is it's okay to leave a conversation on a note. And I'll go back to this with your mother. If your mother's like, wow, you know, if your mother is overwhelmed and sad, to just let her be overwhelmed and sad. We don't need to, the whole idea that we need to like joke around and get someone out of their mood actually takes them out of a cycle before they're done. You know what I mean? Like they have the resilience and the ability to move through it. And if we're there with them, they will move through it more effectively. Like really what helps someone, as we know, is just someone being empathetic and being there with you and saying, I understand, I've been there, I get it, or how can I support you? And not moving to the, you know, hey, and here's a joke, because that it's like a inauthentic way of trying to say, I'm uncomfortable, let's move out of this. And so just letting her, now if it happens naturally, like sometimes when I have a good cry, I cried this morning already. I've cried once today.
Well, sometimes, you know, it's Friday.
Sometimes when I have a good cry, I naturally then start to laugh about something. And then the person I'm with, I hope they join me, you know, but.
Sorry, sweetie.
You kind of joined me.
I didn't cry.
But not join me in the cry, join me in the humor. What I'm saying is if the other person's ready to move to humor,
move.
You can move with them.
Yeah.
But
doesn't that usually happen after you cry?
Yeah,
you laugh?
I always laugh after I cry. I think a lot of people do. I think because it's a release, it's a natural release. I think when we have tears, there's like, we kind of get rid of some of that energy and all of a sudden we feel lighter. And then that's just a really natural way. And that's kind of my point, is sometimes we have to trust the process of pain. And I've been practicing a lot with my youngest, because she's the one that she'll tell me she's struggling with something. I'll join her and then I know how to make her laugh. And she's the one lately that I've been just kind of saying, yeah, that's tough. And just letting her then take the lead on what comes next. And sometimes it's humor and sometimes she's like, thanks.
And for a refresher course, to play, we can play that Brene Brown animated video about the difference between sympathy and empathy.
Yeah.
Because you don't say, oh, it sucks to be you.
No.
You say, I too know what it's like to have deep sadness. So sweetie, first of all, you stole my thunder because I was going to talk about that metaphor, sit in the darkness with them. So thanks a lot.
Well, it's because I said it to you last
week. But I wanted.
So whose thunder would have been stolen? You would have been stealing but what I said
but it
you.
Was going to be my idea to talk about it right now. But what I know, my dad's 79 years old, and our children, our parents become our children in a weird way. Like they become less able. It's just so messed up. Like these are the people that gave us everything 30 years ago, 50 years ago, however many years ago.
Well, we role reverse.
And now the role is reversed. So it's weird. So in a way, I would even encourage this person who is going through this right now, use some of the same intentions, thoughts, as you would, you know, this is your, probably your mom is like seven in her 70s or 80s. Use the same ideas as we talk about how to deal with your kids, with your parents, because.
But not in a patronizing, condescending way.
No,
but
well, we don't talk to our kids that way
that's
either.
That's true. Good point.
So anyways, yeah. So that's my deal. Anything else regarding that? And so I know the person who asked the questions on this talk, and they don't need to identify them, but if you want to say anything, please.
Just write it in the chat box.
Yeah, just write it. And, all right. So anyways, so before we go to our second question from Helen, Sean had an important question, and he wanted to know who, which of us does Skylar take off of from an, art, from an artistic standpoint because of this this deer? And I would say me, because I suck at art.
Well, I don't think that the deer sucks. Oh. I think it's very full of love.
Well, yes. Well done.
I was just telling Todd that mentally I'm very artistic. I have really great ideas. Implementation can be a challenge.
Well, and with the story you told me this morning is like, you remember being a kid and you had this idea of what it was going to look like
yes.
on the end. And some kids are able to take that idea and translate right. it onto canvas or onto whatever this material
Styrofoam.
Is. And some people just have to work a lot harder to do that. And you and I are both mm-hmm. in that camp. Like,
yeah.
like, oh, that's not what I thought it was going to look like.
I have figured out how to channel my artistry into writing a little better. And I can't say like my writing is art, but I can now get an idea onto paper, but I still can't make things. So that's my answer. I can't make like that kind of stuff.
Okay. So here we go. We're going over to Helen. Let's see if we can unmute her, because sometimes it takes me a second for the unmute to start. Come on, let's unmute. Come on, come on, come on, come on. Helen, you try to do it on your end. I don't know if it'll help or not.
There,
oh, there we go.
Yeah, I think it was. I don't know
Hi.
I could do that. Hi there.
What's question, on your mind?
Yeah, my question was concerning the, it was related to a Facebook question that was being asked. And it was a great exchange. I mean, there was I think it was a 12-year-old. I'm sorry, I don't know your first name. De Clement was the...
Melanie.
Melanie, thank you. was the person who was writing the question. And it was a 12-year-old who was really pushing on the limits. And you were writing a lot about how important boundaries were. And I kind of get this idea about boundaries, but in that situation, I didn't really understand. So I was wondering if you could maybe go into a bit more detail about what a boundary is and how it works.
Absolutely.
I don't
know. So, yeah, it was just simply just a bit of explanation.
So just a general question
a
about
example.
Boundaries, Helen, specifically to teenagers?
Yeah. I mean, what was the problem with the boundaries with the 12-year-old?
Okay.
Okay. I'll talk about it specifically and then just a teeny bit generally. So specifically, I think Melanie had already done this with him, was boundaries, structure, and expectations. They all kind of are threaded together and they all are a little bit different, but when they're done together, they're really effective. It creates a deep understanding. And what I mean is that I think I had suggested like working with someone specifically, like a parent coach, that we could be supportive, but that having something in place where if he... I think it was something about her son had left or there was, you know, he had taken off and they didn't know where he was. And that having clear expectations about next time, if that happened again, this is what would happen. And not necessarily we're going to take your phone away, because that really doesn't have a you know, I mean, it may if it had something to do with the phone, but having an expectation of, if you leave, here's what we'll have to do. And again, that, and you may say to me, well, what is that thing? I don't know, because that's their family. And I don't know if that would mean, you know, then that means that he loses a privilege that day, or if that means that the trust has been broken. And so that means he's going to have to, you know, they're going to have to discuss overnights or going to a friend's house. Like, this is very, this is why I wanted her to work one-on-one with someone, because from afar, it's very difficult for me to say, if he does that, then you do this. Like, that's kind of almost impossible for me to do.
Real quick, and I'm not emotionally connected, so this okay. might be unfair.
Okay.
But didn't the young man go shoot hoops and didn't tell his parents that he's going
he
to
left.
Shoot hoops?
Yeah, he left. Right.
So because I'm not tied in and I don't know all the kind of idiosyncrasies of the situation, the fact that the kid could, if it's a safe thing, like if it's not like whatever on the other side of town or whatever, it's kind of good that he can get away, isn't it?
It is, except he didn't tell her. So Todd, you make a very good point. Like, let's flip it on its head. And instead of focusing on consequences, let's focus on, I actually appreciate that you needed some time away from the house. The boundary that I want to set, or the structure, is next time, even just write me a post-it. Like, if you're mad at me, like, and or text me. But I think part of what he, and again, I don't know this for a fact, but I think part of what he was doing was leaving for effect.
Yeah, he wanted his parents to worry because he was pissed.
Right. And so if they, setting up a bound, like, structure and boundaries and expectations, by definition, are to help everyone be on the same page. So then when something happens, we know what we should do. It's not, and when I'm saying that, it's not always that clean. It's not always that easy. But like, for example, my daughter just got her license 2 days ago. Woo! Yes. My oldest daughter has her license.
It's kind of weird.
So for those of you who've been listening for 8 years, she was like, you know, what,
eight?
Like 8 years old. Now she's driving. But before I let her go out and drive by herself, she's a great driver. She's been very trustworthy, but I made a contract for her, and I went over all of the expectations that Todd and I have. We created it together about her as a driver, and that you will, you know, and it was really basic things like, you know, there is a car that we have, is the word delegated? No, we have
delegate.
I don't know what the word is. There is a car that she will be using. And we said, this is the car you'll be using, and we will call it your car, but really this is our car. We, you know, it's kind of like what we did with the cell phone before she got a cell phone.
I don't even want her to call it her car.
Well, I know, but it is the car she uses. Mm-hmm. And then there were things like, you need to keep it clean. You need to keep it filled with gas. The expectation is that you will not text. If you have ever made a choice to drink or anything like that, you will call us. You will not, you know, this kind of expectation, I believe, and I have seen with my own kids and, you know, families I work with, decreases the amount of times that we get into these challenging situations. It doesn't eliminate them, but it decreases them because the expectation is more clear. You know, sometimes when we're just kind of flying by the seat of our pants, we don't know what to do from one situation to the next.
Yeah.
And so sometimes having somebody to help us set up a plan. And again, I love what Todd said, because the plan is not just about, if you do this, I will do this. It's if you're going to do, like our situation with, if you were to choose to drink or do drugs, which we hope she doesn't, but if she does, the expectation is you will call us, we will give you a ride, and we will not ask a lot of questions. Now, that doesn't mean we will never ask questions, but we won't that night. We will come get you. We will do whatever we need to do. And so we are also giving her outs. We're also trying to be her support system and not just, I'm in control, do what I say. We're trying to demonstrate from both sides. So like for Melanie's son, it's next time you get angry with me, because we will get angry with each other.
That's part of being in a family,
it
unfortunately.
Is. Next time you get angry with me, I'm totally cool with you bailing for a while, but please leave me a post-it or text me and I will leave you alone. I will give you that space. But in that, she doesn't say, and then I'll tell you, you don't have to come to your grandfather's party. That she told him, this is what we're doing next weekend. Please don't make plans. This is the expectation. Our whole family will be together. And he came home and said, I don't want to do that.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, please.
Melanie says the boundary was already, she just texted this. or put it in the chat box. This boundary was already set before, as this is the second time he's done this. I specifically told him that if he needs space, that's fine, but I need to know what he will do. He just left and then did not answer my call or text when I try to reach him. He's refused to set up plans with us in the past. So this is an onion that we can go into a deep dive. But the one thing I'll say is that this is the second time he's done that. Mm-hmm. I've told my daughters to put their waffles away 198 times. Mm-hmm. It might take you a few times before our kids do what we want them to do.
Or like Todd said, so then we have an issue, right? So it's not that we've hit a wall and there's nothing else to do. It's we have set a boundary with you and it didn't work, meaning you still left. So what should we do different? Because I want you to have your space. See, we have to approach it with, I want you to have your space. I want you to be able to take off. But how can I know that you're safe? Like, what can we agree upon? And he may say, okay, I'll text you. And then maybe he doesn't again. And then maybe there is a sense of, okay, we were supposed to do this tonight, but I don't know that the trust has been broken. We need to talk this through. Like, this
open lines of communication is key.
And it's an ongoing process. And I think sometimes parents will come to us or any therapist and say, okay, this didn't work. What do I do now? What do I do now? And it's kind of constantly creative. And that's why I like the idea of if you're having a struggle with one individual child, that to have someone individually that you're working with to come up to support you in the next plan. And obviously, Todd and I want to support you and Team Zen wants to support you. But if you feel like there's a danger situation or you feel like you're not getting the one-on-one attention you need from us, which obviously we can't give it. We can do it in this kind of setting. I always recommend a parent coach. I think everybody should have one. So again, and then just real generally, Helen, boundaries and structure. Boundaries are also us defining for our children and for other people how we should be treated, like what our boundaries are. Like, it's not just about having rules and, you know, consequences in your home, but also having a sense of that's not okay. And demonstrating why that's not okay, meaning through words. It doesn't have to be through anger or frustration, but you know, there are certain things where I have limits. I'm trying to think of something with the girls where I have breaking points where I'm like, now we've reached a point where this is not okay.
JC a few times coming in later than she's supposed to.
Yeah. But I'm thinking about like them talking with me about like my own boundaries, or I'll just say with Todd, like we had a work conversation this morning
and we had an agenda
and he and I have like, we practice our boundaries, not just with our children, but with the, you know, like Helen, with your friend that we talked about last time, like, what is your boundary with her? Like, where do you get to a point where you say something needs to shift? Boundaries are, and they're also, they ebb and flow. Like with some people, our boundaries are much stronger, and with other people, they're a little more permeable, you know, depending on who the person is. But you know, I guess the quote is, we treat people how to treat us based on what we're willing to be okay with. And it doesn't mean we have simple answers. Like with Melanie's son, my question, my thing back to her is, okay, another conversation has to take place. We have to keep going back to this shit. Mm. Sorry, but over and over again, these things don't end. And I think a lot of times, especially with our children or in relationship, we'll be like, but we already discussed it. So what do I do now? And it's like, you discuss it again and you not discuss it like annoyed, but like, this relationship is important to me. So let's keep negotiating what's happening.
So one quick thing that Melanie just put in the chat box. Yes. And I realized that I was not clear to him enough where my boundaries are about how I deserve to be treated.
Oh, that's good.
Prior to him leaving, he chose to talk to me in a way that I would not accept from anyone. It took me 2 days to come to a place to have that conversation with him. So the only thing I will say is that I feel like our kids are put on this earth partially to help us evolve. So not that we ever want struggles or challenges, but our job is to see it's always about us. And I know that's a hard thing for me to even get my arms around, but a situation arises and how are we going to come at it? And I feel like sometimes when our kids don't do what we want them to do, it becomes more about them. And I'm always trying to come back to myself, like, my own self-inquiry. What am I really feeling? Why am I feeling it? Why does this trigger me so much? So I would just always balance that out. Like whatever the action is that's driving me up a wall, I always want to at least put at least a part of my energy to why, what can I learn from this? What is,
how can I expand?
How can I expand my love when my kid is doing something that is making me scared for his or her safety? And I know it's not an easy thing to grasp onto because I'm still having a hard time with it, but I always like get curious about everything and mostly about how we're dealing with it inside, not necessarily in fact what's going on outside of us.
And I, you know, when Todd said that, the thing that came into my mind is I remember, and I've told this story before, that I remember being in the shower one time, and I think I was like 3 weeks after miscarrying, and the girls were really little, and Todd was traveling, and I was at a point where I was literally sitting in the shower, and I thought, I can't do anymore. Like, I have been, I don't know, I'm just overwhelmed. I can't do anymore. And I remember one of my daughters came in and opened the curtain and needed something, like just something really basic, you know, how they give you your privacy in the bathroom. You know, I need this or open. And I realized you always have more because you are going to have to show up for this.
Right. So you basically said to yourself, I got nothing left. And then came in and said, I need you to do something. And you had,
I had to,
you pulled from some reserves.
And how many, and I kind of call that place grace, or like the truth about, like, it gets me beyond my thinking. Cause my thinking is what's telling me I can't do anymore. I can't do anymore. I'm in so much pain. I had a client the other day in my office who was saying, I literally can't go beyond this. And I was pointing out, but you got up this morning and you came here and you are showing up. Like, we think we can't, but we can. And that goes to our kids too. When we think, I hit a wall, this is too hard, I've tried this way, I've tried that way, there are still other ways. And I don't mean it's all on you or that it's your fault. This is not about, like, if you would have tried the right way the first time, it is what it is. That's why I use the word as expands you, because I'm sitting on the floor thinking this is it. And then my daughter says, no, I still need you. And I became bigger. Mm-hmm. I became not more mean or more shut down, but bigger.
All right. We're going to move on. I'm going to try to unmute Jacqueline and Matt. And I did successfully. Hi, Matt. Hi, Jacqueline.
Hi.
Hi. It's a question, comment about your podcast this past week.
Okay.
I was really happy when you mentioned Ricky Henderson.
Oh, nice.
That's one of my favorite. Anytime I can incorporate baseball into a conversation, I generally try to do that.
You and me both,
so
brother.
So does Todd.
And he was one of my favorite players growing up. So.
Oh, wow.
And you had mentioned that in the clip that you played of his, when he broke the stolen base record, how he showed a complete lack of humility in the way in which he did that. But I don't think that gave an accurate representation really of who he was, because have you ever listened to his Hall of Fame induction speech?
I have not.
Or there's an ESPN podcast, 30 on 30. It's called, yes, Ricky Won't Quit. Have you listened,
yes,
to that?
So, yes, I listened to that whole thing.
So I think that is an excellent illustration of someone who's kind of gone on this journey. So I think his Hall of Fame speech, the last 30 seconds, is the very definition of humility, whereas his other one doesn't really show. I think it's a good example of someone who's made a journey, of someone who couldn't show humility, and then you know, by the time he was 45 or so, he was able to do that.
Yeah. So first of all, I appreciate that.
Me
and
too.
For those
Thank
of you guys
that.
Who didn't listen to this week's podcast, I played a clip from Ricky Henderson. He's a baseball player, and he broke Lou Brock's stolen base record, I think in the early 90s, maybe, I don't know. And there was a moment in the clip where he says,
very end,
today I am the greatest. And that was Ricky's reputation from then on. Like, Ricky's full of himself. But, you know, Matt, you listened to the 30 for 30, which I think it was four or five. I don't know if it was a one episode thing or if it was multiple, but there are patterns of him being pretty self-inflating, I guess. While at the same time, it's like, there's a little bit of us, there's a little bit of that in each one of us. And it depends on what day of the week you catch me on. There's days when I will bend over to pick up some trash, and then there's another day where I'm going to throw trash on the ground because I'm just in a bad mood.
And I think what Matt's saying is that once you see the Hall of Fame speech, you see the journey he went on. Mm-hmm. Like, he maybe had that thought and then realized the bigger picture going on. And was he a young guy? I mean, athletes are often very young.
No.
No?
No. And he's a freak of nature, because he played professional baseball, I think, until, what, do you remember what it was, Matt? How old was he? Was he still playing? not major league baseball, but professional?
Up to around 45.
Oh my God.
And baseball, like every other sport, is a young man's
game.
And he was just a freak of nature. And he used to drive me nuts because I was a White Sox fan and he played for the A's. And at the time, the A's and the White Sox were in the same division in the AL West. And
he would kick your ass.
He would destroy us because he would walk. He would get a walk. He had a good eye. And then he'd steal second and third. And all of a sudden, there's a guy on third. And then Carney Lansford's batting him in on a sack fly. It's 1-0. And the game just started, you know?
But could you give us some detail?
That's what I'm talking about.
So, Matt, did you have another question? Because actually, we may comment on that on Tuesday because I appreciate that insight. Yeah.
No, that was all.
That was it. I love it. Wanted to say that about Ricky.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Oh, and by the way, I don't know. I didn't listen to this week's show because I had a migraine when we did this week's show. So I don't know if I sounded any different, but I felt like crap.
And I'm not really listening to our shows that much anymore.
I sometimes do.
Unless I play really funny clips.
Unless you're really funny.
Then I'll listen. But other than that, there's too many good podcasts out there. You know? I mean, there's so many good podcasts.
Support yourself.
I do. We have a kind of
take a note from Ricky Henderson and support yourself.
I do. But I already listened to it once when I was talking. You know?
Well, I'd recommend listening to his Hall of Fame speech, the last about 9 minutes long, the last 2 minutes or so.
Awesome. I will do that. I promise you I'll do that. And maybe we'll play that clip
on the
next
show.
Week.
That's what I was saying. Yeah. We'll incorporate it.
Good idea. All right, so I'm going to read another question here, but we do have 23 minutes left, and I don't think this question will take all that time. Plus, Millie might want to talk.
Do you have the one that's anonymous?
I do.
Okay.
So the question is, what suggestions do you have for someone who's having challenges getting pregnant? I asked you this over email a while back and still have your response saved, but figured it was worth asking again, especially since maybe some Team Zen members will have insight. I'm moving away from doing and instead finding peace in being. So not necessarily looking for books, but instead wanting more thoughts on how to frame this thing for myself. Hopefully that makes sense. Anyways, that's what she asks.
Okay, so I'm going to comment on one thing and then we'll give you guys a chance to think about it. So the question she has is, how can she reframe her thoughts around getting pregnant? And I know for some of you, you have older kids and you may be far away from this, but what are the helpful things that you heard when you were trying to get pregnant? And actually, you know who might be really good at this is Aaron. Aaron, you might have some thoughts about this.
Go ahead.
But let me read this. So I was thinking about, when we're in the middle of trying and, you know, we have this idea, as we all do, about grasping, you know, like this is something I want and this is something that I want to focus on, and our energy ends up becoming very, it becomes all encompassing. Like there are times, and I'm sure many of you can relate to this, where, you know, a significant amount of time would go by, like a year, where that was all I was thinking about. Sometimes for many of you, it was years where it's like, it's hard to even enjoy work or family or anything because everything is around fertility. And, you know, that's that grasping sense where there's no room for anything else. And again, what I'm going to say right now is not going to take that away. But like she said, if she's just looking for the frame. So she says, this author that I found, she says, we have, if we relax the grip a bit, so our mind is free to explore and enjoy again and create again, because many women fear that becoming mindful and meditating may make them passive in their quest for a child. You know, that if they somehow release the grip, that somehow they're going to become passive. But letting go is not only gives you it helps you tap into the other parts of your life that are enjoyable and help you feel those joy moments to help keep you grounded. But then maybe other options or other relationships become more possible, meaning you may have more creative ideas. You may be able to talk about your story a little better if you're feeling less overwhelmed and anxious about it and more in a place that you can speak it. Because a lot of women I talked to, and this was when I was speaking more with women who, you know, were trying to get pregnant, but there was such a shame about it. And so there wasn't even a speaking about it. And sometimes just being able to have finding some joy in the midst of the pain, mm-hmm. you know, and which is life. Like that doesn't end. Like this is about fertility, but we become soul focused and we grasp and we want, and we do that when we're trying to have a child. We do that when we want something for a child we have. We do that when we're doing in our careers, and we have to make enough space so we can want something and move toward it without having it be all encompassing. Easier said than done, but again, just a reframe. So
Aaron's going to weigh in, and okay. Then Millie said something too, but before that, it made me think, and this is just any advice can very easily be annoying.
So annoying.
I'm going to say that first, but it made me think of a Wayne Dyer quote that he would say over and over again, which is let go and let God, which basically means, you know, surrender to whatever it is. And I feel like, you know, forget about pregnancy, anything that we want really bad, we're like, you know what, you just got to surrender to whatever happens. And I feel like sometimes for this example, let go and let God, okay, I'll let go. So if I let go, then I'll get pregnant. Mm-hmm. But really, I think what let go and let God means is truly let go. And because if you're letting go with the intent to
then it's
pregnant,
just another form
then
of
it's
doing.
Just another
well,
form
she
of
says
doing.
She's trying to do less and be more.
Yeah.
And that the letting go isn't I've let go of what I want.
Right.
It's, you know, Oprah has a great thing about this with surrender. I actually know who this is, so I'll send her that. And then so everybody else.
So real quick before we pull Aaron in, Millie says, from the standpoint of an adoptive parent like Aaron, I had to reframe my vision of being a parent that I had to be biologically connected to my children, because of course I do not have to be connected to them genetically to be their
parents.
This
is truth.
So thank you for that. Yes. Okay, so Aaron, just so you guys know, Aaron Krieger is part of our team. She's on this Zen Talk with us. We've interviewed her and her husband, Aaron, on the podcast, and it was so good and so long. It was actually two podcasts. It was about an hour and a half interview. So if anybody out there is struggling with this or is interested in hearing a really powerful interview, go just do a ZPR search on Aaron. So anyways, Aaron, what do you got?
Well, thanks for that. And I'll just start with, I'm more than happy to talk offline about this because it's so challenging on every level, you know, especially I'm a type A person. And so I wanted to control it and realizing I couldn't control it. And so I think what you guys said, there's a lot there. Another part is surrounding yourself with the right people. Mm. Because how many times did you hear, if you just relax, you know, you'll get pregnant.
Right.
And even after, so we adopted and then I was able to get pregnant and stay pregnant with our two younger sons. And then I got, well, isn't that what happens? You adopt and then you just get pregnant. And it's like, no, we're grateful, but it's not. You know, so I think it's of giving yourself the grace to go back to that of allowing yourself to be in that place of I just want this and I can't do anything about it other than what I'm doing. To Millie's point, you know, it took us a while before we got to the place of, yeah, we just want to be parents. It doesn't matter how we get there and we're able to move forward on the adoption route. And for us, we moved forward on both routes. So what I tried to do was figure out where I could have control and focus there. Mm. So, you know, I could control, you know, on the adoption part of moving forward on that progress, that we knew that, you know, at least there were some steps within that process that we could be moving forward on. At first I was very much on, you know, online and the different boards at the time. I had to step away from that because it got too much and it got in my head too much that, you know, I don't even know how to explain it other than, you know, the people on there that were so focused that it made me feel worse about everything than like it was helping. So stepping away, and now, I mean, that was prior to social media, or just at the start of it. So at least being able to step away from that and put focus in different areas and try to do things that I thought were more fun or try to reconnect with Aaron. And, you know, even to the point of sex, not as a process and not as a, you know, like, oh, we got to do this. We got to, you know, of like, oh yeah, it's for fun and enjoyment and try to kind of step back from there. Mm. But it's, I mean, the whole thing is so hard and the disappointment, you know, month after month or the disappointment when in losing children, it's, I feel for you.
Aaron, real quick. So, you know, because if this person is married to a husband, like, well, if your husband Aaron were on to give this woman's husband any thoughts, advice, because it's a team thing. Do you, what would Aaron say to
How did you carry it together?
Yeah. So he, you know, sometimes he was great in just being there to support me. Sometimes it was the, it's not about the nail, you know, situation of, you know, wanting to solve it right away. Well, just, you know, I mean, let's just forget about it and we'll, it's going to happen. And, you know, so it's finding that balance. It's just for both of us communicating what we needed at what point. Cause there were times where, you know, he's like, I just don't want this to be a chore. I just want to have fun. I just don't want to think about it. And being able to, you know, guys don't talk about it with other guys. And it wasn't until our losses that Aaron connected with some other guys within, you know, this area and was able to really talk. And he's one to talk more, I think, than a lot of other guys will, a lot of other husbands. So I think it's about finding yourselves together and then allowing each other to, you know, to be on your own. Mm-hmm. We would always say, like, in our losses that we were good to each other. So that enabled us to be good to ourselves. So it's kind of that balance within there.
That's like awesome. Thank you, Aaron. I'm going to read something that Millie wrote in the chat box for those who are listening. She says, these were my notes from the Goop podcast with Oprah, which is related to her wanting her color purple role so badly. Is this what you meant, Kathy?
Yeah, she tells this story a lot, yeah.
So I'm going to read it, but first I think it's awesome and kind of funny that Millie is taking notes about podcasting.
Of course she does.
Like, come on.
Because that's how you remember. Look at what she can give us back.
I know. See? It's pretty awesome. So these are her notes. Color Purple story taught Oprah this. When you want it so badly that you hurt, then it's only through the disallowing of it that it came. Don't hold anything too tightly. Just wish for it. Want it. Let it come from the intention of real truth for you. Then let it go. If it's supposed to be yours, it'll show up. It won't show up if you hold on to it so tightly. That's the way you live your life. That the forces that we call God, nature, universe, energy. My prayer is that the force field holds you in the palm of its hand and never squeezes you too tightly.
Yeah. She actually ended on that note in that podcast. I think they like wrapped up like it on that moment.
That's awesome.
And yeah, I mean, it's the experience. She actually said, Millie, correct me if I'm wrong, but she actually said when she was talking to Gwyneth, she said, I haven't allowed myself to want something as badly as I wanted the color purple because it didn't really serve her. It got so intense. And then once, you know, as the story goes, once she actually let it go and thought this isn't going to happen, it did, but it doesn't always work that way. And what she figured out is that she could cut a lot of that off, all that pain off, and just set the intention, want it, know what she wants, do as much as she could, and then let it go. Like, not, again, it's that grip thing again, just like you said, to not squeeze too tightly. And that is, it is a practice. Like, when I hear that, because I'm in a place right now where I'm not trying to conceive, it sounds so beautiful, right? As Todd said, he had to be with me when I was trying to conceive or when I was miscarrying. And you just like, I don't want to hear another thing like that. But what helped me is when I realized you have to embrace this at different moments. It's not an embrace like just know it and stop doing it. It's your mind will talk to you again. And this isn't just about fertility. It's anything. You know, it's like what we were talking about before about how do I set a boundary. It's like you forget and then you have to go back and then you get lost and you yell or you do something and then you have to go back. Like that's when Todd and I use the word practice, that's what we mean is that I think sometimes advice from anybody, it could be a love doctor or a podcaster or a therapist, it sounds so clean cut. If you just did this, this wouldn't happen. And I call bullshit on that. Things happen. And sometimes I just wrote something the other day about how I lose track of my tools sometimes. Like I have so many tools. How many books have I read? I mean, 1,000,000? Is that a number?
I think you just got to the 1,000,000.
I got to 1,000,000. I've been reading since I was 22 years old, this stuff. Mm-hmm. I know this stuff. I could talk about this until, and I still get in a moment where I'm like, I have no tools. And accepting that is what allows me to get through it. You know, that I'm like, okay, I understand my tools are lost. And then we go back. And then we go back. And back is like a negative term, but maybe we go just back
adjust,
to source,
adjust,
back to core.
Adjust.
Yeah, adjust. Adjust is a better word.
Yeah. Millie's going to talk real quickly about the 1440 thing, but I have a question for her before she answers. Millie, are you there? Do you you take notes on all your podcasts or just
no. No. Oh my God, no. No.
Okay. So that what led you to take notes on that one? Because it was so profound?
It was just so good. I think I said on the Facebook page that the recent one with Brené Brown was so good I had to listen to it again. So the second time I went back and took some notes just because I do have notes on, just like I take notes when I come to your conference.
Yeah.
Right? Because I look at them. But that Oprah one was so good, I listened to it a second time and I wanted to take some notes.
So it was Oprah and Gwyneth? Is that
and
what
actually, I'm laughing because I re-listened to it 2 days ago.
What a shock.
I was in the car and I had exactly like 50 something minutes. And I said, the only thing I really want to listen to is Oprah and Gwyneth. Right now. And it came out, what, months ago, forever ago. It was like the initial Goop podcast, I think. So there are some, and Brené's was really good too. Like that was a really good one too. And it's funny because you may think, well, it's repetitious, but you always get something new. You focus on something different or you hear something differently. You know, I've been hearing these women speak for so long and, you know, it's so, I hear it again and again and again, and yet there's still something that like, it like gets through.
Mm-hmm. So real quick, before I ask Millie to kind of say her spiel, Team Zen is based upon Kim's tagline, zero pressure, 100% support. But we do want to say that in October at 1440, Kathy and I will be there for a weekend. And it's in Millie's backyard, sort of. And Millie's been nice enough to kind of help us coordinate if other people might be interested. So go ahead, Millie.
Yeah, so I've been touting, you know, the 1440 Multiversity ever since I went there 2 years ago. And so I hope that many, if not all, Team Zen members can, you know, can come because it is an amazing setting, first of all, an amazing setting to learn and to grow and to just be spiritual. And what I was offering to Todd and Kathy was that because they have all these different accommodations where, you know, you have the pods of eight, they're very cool. I've stayed in all of the accommodations. And so if you're okay with a hall, a shared bath with, you know, with a, that you share with, you know, just more dorm-like, right? But a pod of eight, I'm happy to organize so that Zen parenting folks can be put together, you know, in one pod. Or if you are coming solo and you would like a roommate from Zen Parenting Radio, then I can help with pairing you guys up as long as you guys decide that you want a hall bath versus a private bath or whatever. So I think you shared the my email.
Yeah.
For those who want to contact me, and I can, you know, pair you guys up or put you guys in a pod of eight.
And they have a whole bunch of different accommodations. When I went there last this January, I stayed in a small room, was by myself, and then it was a shared bath down the hall. But then there's also like regular hotel rooms there too, isn't there, Millie? I think there's like regular.
Yeah. So you can have rooms by yourself. You can even have two beds in your room by yourself. You just pay more.
Yeah.
So there are just laundry. There are so many options, and it got very confusing. But I can put on the Facebook page the shared options that I can help people pair up or get into groups of eight. I can put those. There were four versions, two with a hall bath, not your private bathroom, and two with your private bathrooms. I can put that up there. And then there are other options that you can come with your partner, come with a buddy. If you come with a friend, you save a tiny bit of money. You know, if the two of you just pay for the one room together, you save a little bit, just a tiny little bit. You come with your partner, you can have your private room with a hall bath or a private bath. There are many options. And so you should definitely go and see, because they have nice photos of what they look like as well. But the food, phenomenal, right, Todd? Because
yes.
You were there.
There was,
oh my God.
I would eat food even though I wouldn't even know what it was. Like they would like name it and I'm like, I don't even know what I'm eating right now. But, and I'm usually a pretty picky eater, but yes, it's pretty unbelievable. So,
I mean, it's cafeteria style, but I guarantee it will be the most amazing cafeteria you've ever been to, because yes, they have an executive chef that finds local produce, if not food that they, or vegetables and things that they grow on site. But you can pick and choose, and they plate it like you are at a 5-star restaurant. It's
And Melanie wants to, the closest airport, it's either San Jose or what's the other one?
Yeah, it's about an hour away from San Jose and a little farther from San Francisco. But I think, I mean, only a little bit more from maybe an hour and a half, you know, maybe closer to 2 hours, hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes from San Francisco airport. Not difficult from either airport to get to this place, but you do have to drive up the mountain.
Okay. Thank you, Millie. And then
thank you, Millie. Thank you for doing all that.
Yeah. You're sweetheart.
You're so helpful to us.
And then in the effort of shameless promotion, a week from tomorrow, cause I know there's two people, Aaron and Melanie, who I met both of their husbands. I know Aaron better than I know Melanie's guy, but we're doing a tribe, the Taste of the Tribe men's group, in Elmhurst. It's the first time we've ever done. It's basically a understand what we do without the,
commitment,
without the intensity of what sometimes comes along in a men's meeting. So
like a meditation.
So we meditate we're probably going to meditate with these guys, but because meditating is basically just breathing mindfully, but anyways,
a bit of tribe.
And so anyways, it's Saturday, May 4th. For anybody who might be listening to this afterwards, I just want to encourage any of the guys that might be in the area or any of the people know any guys. I'm trying to expand the tribe a little bit because we believe in what we're doing. And this is a very disarming way to find out about it. We're going to have beer. We're going to have music.
It's Todd's birthday.
It's my birthday.
It's his birthday present to himself.
Yeah.
He's going to do a tribe and then he's going to make me play games.
That's on Sunday. Yeah, you're not part of Saturday, sweetie. Saturday's for the guys.
I don't want to be part of Saturday.
I think it's going to end with a pub crawl.
Nice. So are you going to be okay on Sunday? Are you going to be hungover and on the couch?
I plan not to be hungover. Melanie wants to know, will there be another one? We have a family event that evening. What time on May 4th? I think it starts at 6, but we have meetings every month, so...
If
your husband wanted to jump in with both feet, and you know, it's a very welcoming thing. It's just some guys are like, what do I do? There's no beer. There's no alcohol. There's no sports. I'm not interested. Whereas this, there'll be a TV, there'll be music and there'll be beer. So
offers.
But we plan to do it again. I just don't know when. We've never done it before. So I don't know if it's going to be, 10 people or 50 people. We'll find out. So, anything else, sweetie?
We have lots of new stuff coming. We're going to surprise you guys with lots of stuff.
Are we going to give them an inside track when it comes time?
Yes. You'll get inside scoop on things that we have coming.
Yeah, we have something exciting. Very exciting.
Fun.
We've already been working on it. It's got to be a little frustrating to hear us say that without saying what
it
is.
Well, and the only reason I'm saying that is it's not just that. I'm even talking about the sex talks we're doing. There's just more stuff to come.
Yeah,
Things that for us to look forward to as a team, and we appreciate you being part of the team.
Yes.
And let us know if we can help you in any other way. Todd and I and Sean and Aaron put this survey together.
Yep.
But if there's something we didn't answer, let us know. Like, we're open-minded. We can't do everything. Like, some of the suggestions we can't do just because of life.
Well, and I would say that you guys probably don't know how much we talk about Team Zen. And how much you're on our minds, and just send blessings. And we love doing this stuff. It's going to be a little late, 7 p.m. for El Snoozo over here.
I just want to be done at like 5. I can't believe I'm going to work at 7. But that's like, I have to teach sometimes at night. And that's like what I have to do. And Todd and I are going to start doing some presentations in the fall. And it's just 7 is so damn late.
No.
Like, I'm so done.
No.
And but you know what? I rev back up. I crank back up. But like yesterday I was so done at like 4 and I picked up my daughter. I'm like, I'm going to make dinner. And she's like, oh, tonight's, this night goes to the spring learning thing. I was like, oh, I just, and then I get there and I'm fine. It's just mentally hard.
You know what it is?
I'm such a good worker during the day. I teach early in the morning. I go to yoga. I work. I write. I'm so good. And then at like 4, I'm like, see ya. Bye. What is it?
Did you say 4 in the morning?
No, no. I'm done at 4 or 5.
4, yeah.
Yeah.
Last night, you were fine once you got there.
Right. That's my point, is so once I get there, I'm fine.
What would Eckhart Tolle say about your ability to be mindful and present? Like what?
That it's not good. Yeah. That I'm failing.
Yes. Yes. Bottom line of this podcast is Kathy's failing and I'm doing everything right. Right?
No.
No. All right, guys. I'm going to unmute everybody just so we can hear each other's voices one last time. And then on the count of three, we're going to say goodbye, everybody. Happy Friday. One, two, three. Goodbye.
Happy Friday.
I love you.
Keep trucking too. We'll say that next time. Adios.
Keep trucking.
Bye.
Bye, friend. Bye.